Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
On KMOX, my next guest who is with us over Zoom is Daniel Weissman. He's a professor of psychology, cognition, and cognitive neuroscience at the University of Michigan. And I discovered Daniel because I was, I think, TikToking or going through show prep or something. And it was a story about this neuroscientist who was working on brain farts, basically. And it came out when these NFL players and college players kept dropping the ball at the 1 yard line as opposed to crossing the goal line and getting the points. And I said immediately to Andrew, let's get him on. This sounds really interesting. They've been having good conversations. Doc, welcome to the Dave Glover Show. Great to meet you. Uh-oh. Can you hear us?
I think he might be muted.
Oh, so he's talking, but we can't hear him?
Hold on. I think his computer is going in and out of being muted. Hi, Daniel. Can
How
you
about
hear
now?
Yeah, awesome.
There we go.
We can hear you.
Don't
Here
worry.
I am.
It's just a brain fart, Doc. Nothing to worry about. So this is so interesting. And just to give you a little background on who you're talking to, I'm big into sports, and at the ripe old age of 60 last year, started playing baseball again. Had my degree in psychology, which means I know Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and that's it. But I find these things fascinating. It's just one of those little amateur hobbies of mine, just brain science. I have Alzheimer's in my family, and I'm approaching that age, so I read every article I can. So thank you, legitimately, for going into the field that you did.
Well, you're welcome. I find it fascinating too, which is why I'm here.
So how did you get into, first of all, sports? How did you get into sports psychology?
Well, gosh, I'm not a sports psychologist. I'm a basic scientist, and I study attention and memory and how they interact with each other to support higher cognitive functions like cognitive control. So my delving into sports really just started with that Sports Illustrated piece that you probably read.
Yeah. Yeah. And is there anything that would lead you to say that the brain reacts differently when competing in sports as opposed to general life?
Well, anytime you have a competitive situation, there's a lot of pressure and a lot of stress. And we all know, you know, we're familiar with a phenomenon called choking under pressure.
Yeah.
So, yes, I think tremendous amounts of stress and pressure can kind of mess things up in the brain. There's lots of things that happen when we get under pressure, and those can interfere with attention and cognitive control. The thing that comes most to mind, I don't know if you saw the game between the Phillies and the Dodgers recently, where Orion Kirkring had that strange throw that ended the game.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that was a perfect situation. My father actually called me when that happened and said, "Wow, did you see that? What's going on there?" And so I thought a lot about that, and it just happens a lot in sports.
Doc, do you think there's any sort of, so I have lots of mental issues, just let's be clear about that, and OCD, ADHD, I have this strange thing where, for example, when I was a lawyer, I used to work at this high rise, and there was a gap between the elevator and the building, and I kept wanting to throw my keys down it, and I finally did. I'm not sure if you ran into people who have that sort of disorder, but I got that. But apropos of that throw the pitcher made, I'm wondering whether there's some component that this would be really bad if I just sailed this thing over the catcher's head and you do it.
You mean he's doing it because he thinks it'll be really bad, like really cool?
No, really bad. Like, I am compelled to do, like, don't take me to a wedding because I'm going to want to stand up and take my shirt off. Like, just some people, some people like me are always catastrophizing. And because of my OCD, I'm trying not to do those things. A better sports example for me would be in baseball, I played shortstop. And if I made the first play, nothing would get by me. If I missed the first ground ball, everything would get by me. It was just like self-fulfilling prophecy. I would just sit there and don't hit it to me. Please don't hit it to me. And my coach said, I'm moving you to third base because you need less time to think. And it worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I think thinking too much can certainly lead to problems with behaviors that are fairly automatic and highly practiced, like throwing a ball. If you're a baseball player, I mean, Orion Kirkring has got to have thrown the ball to the catcher a million times. So he knows how to throw the ball to the catcher, right? But if you start thinking too much, that can lead to problems. And I actually think, you know, if you want to talk about Orion, I think there were three things that I saw. Because when my father called me, he actually said, did you see this, you know, game? And I said, oh, I missed the last part. But I found on YouTube, you know, you can kind of get a replay and see the exact, you know, pitch and what everything that happened. And I think there were three things that went wrong, if you want me to talk about
it. I would love it, yeah.
All right. Well, some of these hit upon the issues you're raising. So the first thing that happened, I think, was that he starts to kind of bend over to pick up the ground ball, and he's moving toward first base. If you look at, like, really slow motion, you can see he's moving toward first base, like he wants to throw it to first base, but he doesn't have the ball yet. And because I think he goes a little too far toward first base, the ball kind of goes a little behind his glove. So he kind of misses it. And I think that this is about kind of prioritizing a future goal before you've completed your current goal. And I think it's the same reason why wide receivers in football sometimes drop the ball. It's coming right to them, but they look, their eyes turn like toward upfield where they want to run because they're thinking about their future goal before they've completed their current goal. So I think of this as a kind of multitasking deficit. They're trying to do too many things at once, and they start focusing on the next thing before they finish the current thing.
Makes sense.
Yeah. I think the second thing, when I watched Kirkering on this replay, you know, again, in very slow motion, it looked like he starts to turn around and pick up the ball. And by the time he gets oriented so he can pick up the ball, he's facing home plate. And it seemed to me that at that moment, he gets distracted by what's happening right in front of him. You know, it's kind of like he's failing to keep in mind. He's probably panicking a little bit, but he's not keeping in mind the goal of throwing it to first base anymore. He sees in front of him this guy running to home plate and says, oh, I can get him out if I throw it home. So it strikes me that he sort of gets distracted and pulled into something that seems like it'll solve the problem or just more immediate, like right in front of him. And then I think the third thing that happens is this choking under pressure where, you know, he's thinking too much. And so instead of like just throwing the ball in the right place, he's like thinking, oh, how should I maneuver my arm? You know, if you know how to ride a bicycle, it's much easier if you don't think, oh, here's how I should pedal left and right. That'll mess things up. If you just let your body do it automatically, it'll go smoothly. So I think the third thing that went wrong was this choking under pressure.
It makes total sense. Not again to make this interview all about me, but I have a great example of that. About 5 years ago, I was given the opportunity to throw out the first pitch at Busch Stadium. And I mean, like I said, I'm a ball player and I can throw the ball. And if no one was watching and I was just throwing to my buddy, I could throw 80 or 90 out of 100 without throwing a wild pitch. And I practiced before the first pitch and I got out there. And even though I, you know, perform in front of crowds and such, I was just, I've never been that nervous. And it's like time slowed down and like hearing sirens in my head, it was just like, rah! And rather than throwing a nice, easy throw sidearm, I threw it overhand as hard as I could and sort of skipped it. Like it wasn't one of those, like it's going to make TikTok, but I was really disappointed. And that I've thought about that experience so much because I was so comfortable standing there. And then as soon as I walked out to the pitcher's mound, it's like my physiology changed, not just my thoughts, my body changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, obviously, we also have these fight or flight reactions, right? So when we get really stressed out, you know, think of our ancestors somewhere on the savannah and a lion approaches them. They have to run, right? Or else they're going to get killed. So we have this kind of fight or flight reaction when we get, you know, nervous, and we have releases of all sorts of hormones, adrenaline, all kinds of things that change our physiology in that situation.
So interesting. We're talking to Professor Daniel Weissman, professor of psychology and neuroscience out of the University of Michigan. Doc, how about applications, to the extent that you've studied this and worked on and written about it, for just the workplace or people in general and how the brain functions? What are some of the more interesting findings you've had?
You mean applications about choking under pressure or things that we're talking about?
That are in general. Yeah, that are in general. We don't have a lot of neuroscientists on the show, so.
So I study, like I said before, attention and memory. And one of the big things I study is how to cope with distraction. And a lot of times what we find in our studies is that there are a couple of ways to help people cope with distraction. We don't really have applied work. I'd love to at some point work with a baseball team or something like that. That would be fun, or a football team. But we find in our studies that we're able to help people cope with distraction either sometimes by separating distracting information from relevant information in time, so it's not so distracting because it happens long before. We have also found, interestingly and paradoxically, that the more we distract someone, the less distractible they become, which I find fascinating because it suggests that the brain somehow can adapt to the presence of distracting stimuli and in this way make itself less distractible. So that's something that we've been studying a lot. How does the brain do this? What sorts of processes are involved? So those are a couple of things that we've studied. Like I said, we haven't applied this in a real situation, but I think it would be interesting to do so. In your own case, when you were out on the mound and you know you felt your physiology change, did you kind of feel like, well, if you practiced that about 5 or 10 times, you'd then be able to, you know, pitch the ball better?
Yeah. And it was a feeling like what you're saying makes sense, because the feeling I had was a flavor of panic, which was, let's just get this over with. Standing here on this mound is making me super nervous and anxious. I could take a deep breath and collect myself, or I could just throw it as hard as I can and walk off the mound.
Yeah, and you chose the latter?
Yeah, I chose the latter, which, looking back, it just makes no sense at all. And it's one of those things, like, I bring it up to you because it's one of the, you know, it's one of the peaks in my life where I can point to something and go, that was weird. Like something happened to me, as opposed to just like thinking myself out of it, which I have done a lot, but like 5 seconds before I took them out, I was fine.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of things, you know, to say about choking under pressure. So when the stakes are really, really high and we put so much pressure on ourselves to perform well, I think that's when we can really start overthinking. Right. And it's just like the riding the bike example. It's like, if you know how to ride a bike, just ride it without thinking. If you start thinking, this foot first, the next foot, you know, you're going to lose your balance. It'll be choppy, right? Sometimes you have to let your body do what it's practiced doing. Yeah. But if your brain gets in the way and you start thinking, so I guess, I don't know, I asked if you thought you would do that if you practiced it, you know, 5 or 10 times in the same pressured situation. It sounded like you said you wouldn't, or you might be less likely to. Mm-hmm. So that might be one way in an applied situation to try to avoid this error. Right. If you could get athletes in these really pressured situations and just have them fail a few times, then ultimately they might do it. In fact, I've seen a few field goal kickers do this in football where, for example, in a very pressured situation, they miss, but then they get the next field goal.
Hmm. Yeah, that's really I've got more examples. We'll have to have you back on in the future, Doc. You need to study me and we'll write a book. That's Daniel Weissman from University of Michigan. We appreciate it, Daniel. Thank you.
Thank you.
That was interesting.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sorry, Andrew. You had a question, but we were running late.
No, you're all good.
Welcome back, DGS on KMOX 223. I have a lot today.
Yes.
I'm sort of hesitating because I'm like, well, I could do that. Well, I could do that. Well, I'm going to do this.
Okay. Do you ever find on days where you have a lot, you actually end up using the worst stuff because you're like, well, I got to save the good stuff for later.
Sometimes. Yeah.
I do that all the time.
I'll tell you this much. I hate magicians.
Yeah,
oh, why?
It was, they're just always fooling you.
Yep.
It was brought back to me because I'm getting these TikToks like David Copperfield's famous make the elephant disappear was done with blah, blah, blah. And I've always known they weren't really magic.
Yeah.
But just seeing the way they do it, you're like, well, that's a bunch of bull crap.
Mm-hmm. You just have an extra wall. You just had a bunch of union carpenters build an extra wall. And, like, I guess there's some talent in designing it, but...
Well, then you've got to distract the eye.
I guess.
I think that's impressive.
Well, that's the most impressive part to me.
Well,
is the,
let me say this.
The sleight of hand.
I find, like, rudimentary on-the-street magicians who are doing things with their hands way more impressive than some
like
dandy
Chris Angel or
that
somebody.
Gets out there and they're with a big flourish and they're like, and the moon is gone. I could do that. If you just tell me the mark to hit, I can go, the moon is gone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So.
Good point.
Yeah.
And those guys, they're keeping a lot of secrets. They got a lot of people signing those NDAs
that's right.
or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
Don't trust them.
I had an interesting experience over the weekend, entertainment-wise. I had one day pretty much to myself, so I was just going to, you know, maybe find a movie to watch or something. And I was on TikTok, and it was a Welsh cottage. And I thought, oh, I wish I could find a movie. I swear to God, set in like at a Welsh cottage, and people just sat around drinking wine and smoking cigarettes.
Okay.
I don't smoke, but I find the aesthetic of people smoking on film very attractive. I think it's sexy when women do it. There's just something about it. Maybe the era I grew up in. And the next thing I see on TikTok. I didn't say it. There was no one in the house with me. I didn't type it. I thought it. Okay? The very next thing that came up when I moved my thumb was a trailer for a movie called Rabbit Trap, which features Dev Patel and this actress I'd never heard of, set in a Welsh cottage where they smoke all the time and chase down fairies. So it's paranormal. It's literally in Wales, and all they do is just smoke one cigarette after another.
Mm.
Now, how weird is that? And I rented it, and I watched it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it, but that's kind of weird.
You should have never gotten that Neuralink implanted.
I'm saying, man.
Yeah.
Now they know everything.
It's the mark of the beast.
Really makes you think.
Maybe you were influenced by your algorithm more so than your algorithm influenced by you, though. Like, maybe you were thinking about Welsh cottages because... You had seen previously Welsh cottages on TikTok,
could be.
Right? And like you're not even noticing all these Welsh cottages being
so. Do you
into
think maybe they fed me that because I lingered on some Welsh cottages and they're like, "Well, here's a movie that happens in Wales."
Yeah, I think I think that's how it. No one's really 100% sure how the TikTok algorithm does its thing. Or maybe people do, and I'm just stupid. But. I think that tends to be how it works. Like, if you spend too much time watching, I always, whenever I doze off or whatever, or zone out, and I've had a video loop 7 times, I always get a little nervous that that's going to inform everything I'm going to see for the next week or whatever.
Well, if you want to go fairy hunting in Wales and smoke a few cigarettes, Rabbit Trap.
I really do.
Man in town, spend all my money.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Playing a hot moon in a glass by hurricane. And a howl the barn is driving rain.
Our segment with Bernie is brought to you by Solita, a Daikon comfort dealer.
Welcome back, guys. DJ
Country, SNKMOX. Time to talk to Bernie Miklas. Hello, Bern.
Good afternoon, Dave Glover. How's everything?
Good. We're without Kevin Wheeler, so he won't be interrupting us. We have that going for us.
There you go. I guess I have him tonight, though, on Rush Hour, or unless he's out missing on that, too.
Oh,
so we'll see.
Really? How interesting that he can do that
well,
show.
Well, you know.
So interestingly, about half an hour ago, I had a neuroscientist from University of Michigan on the show who has written an SI article about basically brain farting in sports. It was really interesting talking to him. And I think I ruined the interview because I was telling him too many stories about myself and how many times I've choked in sports and why this and why that. But he talked about that play where in the division series where the pitcher lost the game by sailing it over the catcher's head. And yeah. It was an interesting discussion. I think you would have enjoyed it.
Yeah, I think most human beings, when they see something like that happen to the Phillies reliever, when they had a chance to beat the Dodgers that night and get the game to winner take all game five and it didn't happen. I mean, I felt crushed for the guy. I mean, unless I was a diehard Dodgers fan and you don't care how they win that game, I felt awful for that dude. And I also thought it was cool the way his teammates supported him. And even the Dodgers expressed genuine support, saying, hey, yeah, we want to win, but I wouldn't wish that on anybody because he's trying to do what he's best. He's a good pitcher. It just was one of those moments. So I don't think social media is quite as kind, though.
No.
Surprise, surprise, right?
No. We're going to do baseball and college football and such, but what did you think of the fight after the Chiefs game last night?
Well, I thought it was weird, but after reading about it, I mean, I thought it was kind of unfortunate, but after, was reading about it, it seems like, one guy really is to blame for the whole thing, that safety for the Lions. Yeah. I forget his name all of a sudden, so forgive me. But yeah, but, at that point, like he instigated and he even apologized and said he went overboard and he was to blame for all of it. Yeah, so the Chiefs got involved, but that's usually what happens. You stick up for your teammate, right? So really, a lot of fuss, I get it, but it really didn't amount to that much what it really meant. It's just like one guy lost his cool.
So let's go back to Major League Baseball, and I know I say these kind of things all the time, but I think I'm genuine. I don't know, outside of my family, if there's anything I love more than MLB playoff baseball.
I'm feeling you because I watch it quite a lot every fall, but this season, for some reason, maybe it's the matchups. I don't know, but I've pretty much watched every inning. Now, I haven't watched them all live, but that's the great things about having the DVR feature like YouTube TV, which I have. Mm-hmm. You can watch it whenever you want, or you can stay up till 2 a.m. watching games. So I think it's been a great tournament so far. I'm really looking forward to the Dodgers and the Brewers because I don't want to use the whole David and Goliath thing, but it's just an intriguing matchup. You've got the Dodgers with their $350 million payroll against the Brewers with their $121 million payroll. That kind of stuff makes for a great matchup.
In general, Bern, do you find yourself rooting in sports even if you don't have a favorite team in it? Does it just happen naturally?
Going into every one of these things, I usually have a rooting interest. Like, I have such great admiration for the Brewers and how smart their operation is. And how they outpunched their weight class and how they've taken the Central over from the Cubs and the Cardinals, who spend more money than them. I'd love to see the Brewers knock off the Dodgers, not because I hate the Dodgers, but it's just this idea that, these small payroll teams have no chance and this and that. I'd like to see them show actually, hey, world, we do have a chance. You got to root for the underdog. At least that's how I feel, even though they won more games than anybody this year. But the way it's perceived, they're the little engine that could, where the Dodgers is, they're just born and funded to crush everybody in their path. So I would say I'm ambivalent in the American League Championship Series because I like both teams. Yeah. I just don't really prefer one over the other.
Yeah, they both have good stories. They both have solid teams. They both have personalities.
Yeah, and I just think I think Toronto's a great baseball town, and I think Seattle really has been a long-suffering baseball town. I'm happy for both of those fan bases. I guess maybe I'm happier for Seattle's fan base because they, you know, they haven't been a factor at this time of the year since 2001, you know. And I know Toronto hadn't won a World Series since the early 90s, but there was a pretty long absence, but they've been involved in playoffs consistently in the last 7-8 years or so.
Yeah, I took a few years off there during the aughts where I didn't really follow baseball that closely, and I didn't realize the Mariners had been even a team as long as they have.
They are, and it's such a major market, and granted, it's in the upper northwest corner of the United States, but they are like the, you know, they're a really anonymous franchise, even though they've had some great players along the way. You know, Ken Griffey Jr., Edgar Martinez, the great Suzuki, Randy Johnson. It's not like they haven't had great players. They've had a lot of them, even some guys now with Cal Raleigh and, you know, Julio Rodriguez. They've had a lot of talent through the years, but they sort of just disappear from our sporting conscience, you know, or consciousness, mm-hmm. I should say.
Yeah. Let's talk about Mizzou. Even with a 3-point loss, did you learn something about the team?
Well, at first, you know, first of all, it's always tough because I wanted them to win. I thought they would win, and they had a chance to win. So I'm disappointed that they didn't win. Does this mean, you know, their season's ruined? Of course not. But if we're talking about Mizzou as a potential playoff contender, anytime there's a chance to win a game when it's right there, you got to do it. You know, so this reduces their margin of error going forward. They got 4 of the last 6 regular season games on the road. I don't know how they're going to play on the road because we haven't seen them play on the road. But there's 2 things that I didn't like. I didn't like the fact that Mizzou, in my opinion, defeated Mizzou, you know, with the bonehead mental, unforced mental errors early in the game. You know, the unsportsmanlike penalty and all that stuff. And then you had, I thought Bo Prabula was really erratic throwing the ball, and he's missing receivers, and he's also seeing receivers who were wide open. That happened late in the game. They can't stretch the field with deep passes, and I think that's a problem. They've only attempted, and this was true of the Alabama game. Mizzou has only attempted 14 passes this season, just 14, where the ball travels 20-plus yards there. I mean, that's just ridiculous. It makes it so much easier to control their or contain their offense when they can't stretch the field. The thing that me and a lot of other Mizzou fans, I don't know how Ahmad Hardy touches the ball 12 times in that game. I just don't understand that. Alabama factually has not been strong against the run. Alabama factually has been weak against the run on the road. And Hardy's running style is the exact type of running style that gives them a lot of problems. Plus, Alabama was missing a couple of starters in their front 7. How can he touch the ball 12 times in that game? And listen, I know Alabama did a pretty good job of containing him, but you don't stop running him. He went into that game as the best back in college ball. You just keep giving him the rock. Let him pound away. That's why he's great. So I was really disappointed in that, and frankly, I didn't understand it.
Couldn't agree more. I think that's an excellent analysis of the game. I felt my son Nick is a Mizzou kid, and we weren't together, but he was texting with me the whole time. And yeah, he was saying the same things that you were. Just very, very frustrating to know that you could go 6-0, you could beat Alabama, you could move into the top 10, and it was all on you, and you just didn't do it.
You know, and he had averaged 28. I'm talking about Hardy. In all the games leading up to this one, he had averaged like 28, 29 carries a game. And when he played with, so the 2 FBS teams that they played, or the 2 power conference teams that they played, Kansas and South Carolina, he had the rock all night long. I mean, he was like 30 times in each game. And again, it's like that old joke, you know, is there any way to stop Ahmad Hardy? And the answer being, well, yeah, the Mizzou coaching staff. That's, you know, yeah. What I mean? And listen, man, I think Drink is great, and I think Kirby Moore, the offense coordinator, is great. But maybe they were overthinking it a little bit, because as much as I like Bo Prabula, if I got a choice, okay, who's got to win this game for me? I'm not going to put the – I haven't seen enough in the passing game to put the game in his hands. I have seen enough of Ahmad Hardy to put the game in his hands.
We only have about a minute left here, Burren, but give us your best 60 seconds on the Illini.
I didn't watch much of it because I was consumed with the Mizzou game. But to be honest with you, I didn't give them much of a chance to win that game. I really, really, really didn't. I think Ohio State's the best team in the country. I think Ohio State's got the best defense in the country for sure. And I thought Ohio State would have a really good chance to, you know, stop some of the stuff that the Illini do well, you know. And the Illini have an excellent quarterback, but Ohio State gave him fits. And I'm not surprised. I mean, that's just a great team.
Tell us about Saliga before we let you go.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
1041 FM KMOX 249. So I wanted to address something. We got someone on the stream last week taking us to task because we were not giving Donald Trump any credit for what's going on in Gaza. And the fact is, nothing had happened last week. And so I kind of wanted to address that and, of course, the larger topic, what's happening today. And here's the thing. This show is us. It's for human beings, and we have our opinions, and we have our disagreements, and we have things we're right about and wrong about, but it's just four human beings doing the show. The fact that I don't care for Donald Trump does not keep me, personally, from being unable to see any good in him or anything that he does being valuable. I don't think he's a dark warlock or something like that. I just think he's not a great person who's over their skis. But when it comes to this, now that we have this agreement and the hostages have been returned, I would absolutely say that both sides clearly saw value in Donald Trump. Both sides were clearly pressured effectively by Donald Trump. And I am hopeful that the peace will stick. But you have to remember, I'm 61 years old. I remember when Jimmy Carter did this and when Bill Clinton did this and when pretty much every president from my lifetime took a swat at it and kind of got to like the point where they're having, you know, the Camp David Accords and Menachem Begin and all that kind of stuff. So I hope and pray that it sticks. And if it does, give the man the Nobel Peace Prize. But even if it doesn't stick, I will give him credit for bringing the parties to this point. So I just wanted to put that out there.
Yeah, I mean, I really hope it sticks, too. I don't want anyone else to lose their life as a result of this conflict. I will say, Dave, Hillary Clinton heaped some rare praise on President Trump.
Ah.
Yeah, those two are not friends by any stretch of the imagination. But, you know, she says, I really commend President Trump and his administration, as well as their leaders in the region, for making the commitment to the 20-point plan and seeing a path forward for what's often called the day after.
I think in with my worldview and my paradigm, I think two things are very important that we've lost. The most important thing to me is that you need to the ability and then you need to do it is to call out, quote unquote, your side, whatever side of the aisle you're on. you know that your side makes mistakes. You know that they come up with stupid ideas. And I think that it is very important that we call ourselves out. And then secondly, I think it's important that we be able to give praise to the other side, again, quote unquote, when they do something good. And we just don't seem to do that much at all. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, maybe you'll see CNN tonight give some passing sort of a pat on the back, but not much. And on Fox, it's the same thing. You're not going to see them say like, wow, AOC came up with a really good idea, or Bernie Sanders, you're onto something with this. It just doesn't happen. So I think it's important that it does happen when we can make that happen. So.
Absolutely.
But it is hopeful. I mean,
it is. And I mean, I'm the fact that Hillary said something is like, okay, this is,
yeah. You know. Well, I just think, you know, I've seen a few things in my life that were like, wow, wow. But I've seen the images of Gaza, but I can't wrap my mind around it. Like 80% of structures are destroyed. Mm-hmm. It's just been leveled, just razed. And then these people are going to a home that they don't know whether if it's standing or not, but there's an 80% chance it's not. And even if it is, everything around it's not standing. And it just like we, one of the first things I think we have to do to be fair brokers in any of this is to realize we have a very limited experience at this. We can have opinions, but imagine being dropped in the middle of it.
Yeah.
Imagine that's your life. You'd have very different opinions.
Yes.
And very different priorities.
Well, it needed to stop.
Yes.
It needed Amen. To stop. Anyone who had an interest in any of that continuing, I would have a very hard time trusting that person. Yes, let's just hope that it sticks.
Yeah. Dolphins are showing up with Alzheimer's.
Oh, no.
Yes, down around Miami-Dade County, dolphins are washing up on shore, and every one of them, they're doing autopsies, whatever they call it, autopsy on a fish. Fish?
I think dolphins are mammals.
Okay, I'll take your word.
I could be wrong.
They're linking it to neurotoxins in the water and pointing out that the biggest population of humans with Alzheimer's is only 100 miles away.
Interesting.
From there. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, I wonder what kind of environmental factors play into that, because that's where my mind immediately goes. I wonder, you know, if we all have a credit card's worth of microplastics in our brains, imagine living in the ocean, which is filled with all of our trash, you know? So true. Scary stuff.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.